Blog Talk Radio.
Rich Farrago, known as CT Mets Fan on Twitter, and you are listening to the Metsian podcast with Sam, Rich, and Mike. And we are thrilled to be talking to you on the end of the first weekend of the 2022 Major League Baseball season. We had a lockout. We waited. We had delayed spring training, a delayed opening to the start of the season. We waited for all of it. And you know, we had a full season's worth of experiences wrapped up in four games, and we are very much looking forward to peeling that back and talking about it with you. So first, before we get in, let me bring on my partners in podcasting. First, let's go to the wonderful borough of Brooklyn and bring in Mr. Mike LeCullen. So, Mike, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Hello, Rich. I enjoyed myself. The highs and lows of the first four games is like being on the Cyclone in Coney Island. A lot of fun.
I love it. Nice. Very nice. So now let's bring on our CEO and executive director and head honcho of podcasting operations. We always like to ask this fine gentleman where we find him because he does move around. Last podcast, I believe he was up the Thruway in upstate New York. So let's bring on Mr. Sam Maxwell and ask you, Sam, the same two questions we ask you every time. Where are you and how are you?
Well, thank you, Rich. And what's beautiful, there's going to be a little bit of synergy there since I've temporarily retired my lift legs, if you will. And, that's for another story another day. But I am currently in Flatbush, Brooklyn right now. Mike and I representing the Bedford and Sullivan podcast. Well, shameless plug up front. Everybody check it out. And, Brooklyn, we go hard.
There you go. And before this podcast is over, we will have a chance to talk just a little bit, bring the Brooklyn Dodgers into the discussion. So, and we have a very esteemed guest, the voice that you've heard before, on the Metsian podcast. We really, really enjoy talking baseball with her. Transplanted East Coaster, Mrs. Anna Bryce. So, Anna, how are you tonight? And thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, gentlemen, for asking me to be on. And I am doing great. I'm really happy that baseball has started, and I, with anticipation and excitement every night, turn the game on. I'm just happy that the next 5-6 months of my life will be baseball.
Fantastic. That's what we like to hear, Anna. And once again, thank you for joining us. So, folks, like I said in the opening, it's unbelievable. Four games in, a grand total of 158 to play, and we've compressed, like only the Mets could do, so much into four games. So let's start to talk about it. So, Anna, you're our guest, and I'm going to go to you first tonight. So, first of all, let's start with this. The Mets opened the season against the Washington Nationals in Washington. Washington is clearly rebuilding. The Mets take 3 out of 4. They took 3 out of 4 in kind of an interesting kind of a way, winning the first three and collapsing in the last one. So let me just start with your overall impressions. Are you good with 3 out of 4, or are you one of those who might say you have to sweep them, you have to step on their neck when you can? Where are you with the whole thing?
Not that I ever want a loss, obviously, but I'm good with 3 out of 4 because it's just not going to happen in a 162-game season. We're not going to – yes, I was calling for us to be 162-0, so it's not going to happen. But it's just not going to happen. I think that we looked really good. Today was a letdown. It really was. As I was saying earlier, just a couple minutes ago to you, I really thought we were sailing along beautifully today, and then it just, you know, went completely flat. But I have such a great feeling about this team, and I don't know how the three of you guys feel, but I just feel like this team is mixing well. The personalities are mixing well. You know, I saw a quote on, I don't know, Facebook or Instagram or something that the Mets posted from Mark Canha, where he said, "We've got two guys with completely busted lips, and they're out there playing. And I really appreciate that," he said. And I'm just like, ah, I love these guys. I just have a great optimistic feeling, and I just feel like they, the players, are energized or have a great renewed energy. So I'm looking forward to this year.
Very good. Sam, same question. How are you with taking 3 out of 4? And before we dive into any of the many mini storylines or subplots, just your overall impressions of 3 out of 4.
Well, you know, sometimes, especially when, like, we start the season off right one way or another, I appreciate that first loss because it's like, all right, we got that one out of the way. So I'm kind of like that, even though it was disappointing the way the loss went. But there's some good signs that we can talk about regarding the loss, within the loss, one way or another. And we have had so many experiences with the Mets starting off right, and then it all kind of just, like, falls a little by the wayside. Sometimes I think about 2017 when I temper my expectations because they started off, I believe, 7-3. But there are so many signs that you can feel that this isn't your granddaddy's Mets anymore. So, it's a lot to get into.
And we will. So, Mike, bring us home on this one. 3 out of 4 in Washington, the format in which they did it. What are your overall thoughts at this point?
Well, you know, it's a one-day downer, but overall happy. You know, 3 out of 4. Good way to start the season. But at the same time, you know me, I'm forever the pragmatist. We played Washington, and we're not going to be fighting for a division title, or against them, I should say. That's going to fall on, you know, more on Philadelphia. Let's see how we do then, Atlanta, and et cetera, et cetera. So I feel like they met expectations. And, you know, as we've been saying, under new ownership, different frame of mind, different expectations, different approach to this whole thing. I like a lot of things that I saw. But today, you know, some of those faux pas were avoidable. We don't like, you know, pitching, defense, timely hitting. We don't like to see them give away games. But a lot of positives from the series.
Agreed. All right. You know, and we're Mets fans, right? So being Mets fans, we have to start with the negative. It's in our DNA. It reminds me of the Charlie Brown Christmas where Linus says to Charlie Brown, "You're the only person who could take Christmas and turn it into a problem." But so what we're going to do is we're going to take a 3 out of 4 and we're going to talk about the negative first because that, like I said, that's just what we do. So Sam, I'll start with you here. And I'm going to set you up. Mets have the lead today, 2-1 going into the 8th inning. Now, Buck lets Chasen Shreve start the 8th inning after Shreve had pitched an inning and a third. And Shreve gives up a hit. Okay. Then he goes to Trevor Williams, who is on the team seemingly as a long reliever, spot starter. You could even argue an extra pitcher that probably would who would probably have to go down on May 1st when the rosters go down. So it was interesting, shall we say, to go to him in that particular spot. When the game was on the line, you had a man on first, you know, clinging to a one-run lead in the 8th inning, and you go to a guy who is depth, we'll call it at best. Okay. Now, more to that. We have word that Trevor May was available, Ottavino was available, and Lugo was available. Also, we have Buck saying Saturday night that he was going to get Shreve and Williams in the game. He was going to do that. That's what he was going to do on Sunday. Okay. So I'm going to ask you to comment on that, all three of you to comment on the pitching machinations in the eighth inning. And I'm also going to throw this one in too, which kind of raised my eyebrows. By the way, I love Buck, but this one raised my eyebrows a little bit. When the Mets had a chance to tack on, and they had runners on with Cano up and a lefty pitcher in the game, and he had J.D. Davis, you know, sitting on the bench, who we know was on the team because he matches left-handed pitching, that would have been a chance to try to put the game away, just pinch hit right there. So I'm going to ask you to comment on the pitching machinations in the eighth, leaving Cano in to face the lefty instead of going to J.D. Davis when there were ducks on the pond, as they say. So, Sam, if you could start us off on that.
Oh, man. I mean, I think that with Trevor Williams specifically, you know, it's like people were wondering why Trevor May, who got up earlier, wasn't in the game, and the broadcast was, of course, speculating whether there was an injury or not. Sounds like there was not. You know, I just think in terms of that, it was Buck trying to get all of his horses some work. I think the idea, like you're saying, you know, it's major league pitching. Let's see early on whether you can handle a big situation. And, of course, some of it was hard hit, but he did make pitches that could have gotten him out. And, unfortunately, you know, we'll talk about the Pete stuff in a little bit. So that's my take on in terms of that. And in terms of earlier in the game, you know, that's just, like, I think that we – It's funny because us New Yorkers and us Mets fans were overanalyzing this before Twitter, and now Twitter exists. And so I think that, you know, Buck is not going to be perfect. There's going to be some questionable decisions. However, I just think that I think that, yes, he could have possibly done that, but he is just letting Cano prove himself early on. And a lot of times, you know, you could say, oh, you know, like Mike always says, you can't win pennants in April, but you sure can lose them. We shouldn't take lightly a game like this. But I'll look at it from a big picture standpoint and still think that everything's going to be fine.
Mike, before I go to you on this one, one thing Buck has said is that he manages for the long term. You know, he's not going to manage every game like it's the seventh game of the World Series. So keep that in mind, you know, if you don't mind commenting on that as well. It certainly looks as though or seems as though you could apply that logic for why he did things the way he did. But what's your take on it, Mike?
I'm not going to question him. I'm not averse to that kind of philosophy. Good managers, they manage 2-3 games ahead. They do that. So I have no problem with that either. I'm not questioning today's pitching decisions. For me, you know, we handed the Nationals an extra out. That helped, and that kind of blew things open. So I looked there first. I'm not looking to in any way, shape, form blame Buck for anything today. I'm willing to let this play out for now. But that obviously points to another issue that, you know, has been lagging, and we'll get to it. But, yeah, I'm just not doing that yet, Rich. I'm not pointing fingers. I have no questioning of his strategy or what he said. We handed them an extra out, and, you know, and that's where my problem is. And if you look at the four-game series, you know, Mets production sort of swung like a pendulum. Yeah, on the one hand, look, we gave them an extra out, and sometimes you want your bullpen to overcome that and pull through and elevate. But if you look at the plate, first two games they had double-digit hits, and they smacked the ball, you know, around with runners in scoring position. In the last two games, and particularly this one, they were held under double digits in hits. This was Sunday's game was the lowest of the four, and they were 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position. So, you know, you can say they didn't produce enough offense, not as much, clearly not as much as they did in games 1 and game 2. So, you know, there's a lot of sprinkles you can throw on this ice cream cone, but I'm just not willing to go there, not after four games, and certainly not Buck Showalter. He has my respect, and whatever he does for now, you know, until things go awry and we have to, you know, apply a vote of no confidence. But if and when it ever gets to that point, you know, we'll decide then. But for now, I'm not questioning it.
Very rational approach. So, Anna, if you'd like to give us your thoughts on the way Buck handled the bottom of the eighth and also the decision to leave Canoan against the lefty. And I bet other fan bases are probably laughing at us for overanalyzing the fourth game of the season, but please have at it.
Yeah, you might be right. And I agree with Mike about Buck and, like, I want to trust him because we know he's smart. We know he's done the preparation. We know he's probably the most prepared guy in baseball, according to pretty much everybody. And would I have liked to have seen Trevor May in? I think so, because he only pitched game one, whereas Lugo pitched game one and game two. Smith pitched two games, you know, Ottavino pitched two games. So I probably would like to have seen Trevor May come in, but I get exactly what Buck is saying, where then we go to game five and those two guys have gotten zero work. What happens if we didn't give them a fourth out and, you know, and again, this, if it had worked out, Buck is a genius. So, you know, it's always hard. It's easy to say when, you know, when it didn't work out, like, what the heck are you doing? So I'm going to lean on the side of, you know, more like what Mike was saying, and it's game four, and I'm going to trust Buck. So far, I haven't seen any WTF moments other than this, if we even want to raise that to that level, like we did the past 4 years. I mean, the past 4 years, there were times I just was shaking my head going, like, oh, my God, what is going on here? So far in four games, other than this questionable part, I haven't been freaked out yet, but it is just four games. And Keno, I am so torn about what to think about Keno, because my initial before spring training was, I don't want him on my team. But by all reports, the players are saying he's just a great force on our team. And then he's already gotten three hits so far, in the first four games. And perhaps that's what Buck was thinking, was kind of riding a, it's not that that's a quote unquote hot hand, but he does have four hits, none today, but three hits, sorry, you know, three hits in four games. So probably JD Davis would have been better to come in at that point, but I guess I'm going to play it out and see what happens after 30 games and after 40 games. Maybe he's trying to give Cano some time because he did have a year off and try to keep him in a rhythm. So would I have preferred JD? Probably. I'm not going to raise either of these two to, you know, what the heck is going on here level yet. I think it's too soon. And
I
I'm
agree.
Not expecting
I think none of,
after, yeah. And I don't think
I'm
ever
going
to have to, with Buck, I don't think I'm ever going to have to raise it to that level, but I'm not going to right now.
I agree. I think we're early on, and here's my take on it. I think his handling of the pitching I was okay with. because I do think those guys have to get some work. They haven't. They probably haven't pitched since Tuesday in their last spring training. They haven't pitched since Tuesday. I'm not sure if they got in the game. Might even Monday, their last spring training game. And you have to get them some work. And he said, you know, he had used May in every game, I think, of the series. And you know, you don't want to start. And then if he was burning these guys out, using them every day, we'd be criticizing him for that in a couple of weeks. So I think you have to manage the pitching for the long term, and I have no problem with it. Yes, it costs the game, but I have no problem with that decision. I have more of a problem with not pinch hitting for Cano there, and yes, I know he's a professional hitter, and I do like Robbie Cano. I think he's going to help this team, despite, you know, the drug, the PED stuff. I do think he's going to help the team, but in that situation, I do think the right move was to try to go for it all, try to go for broke there, and, you know, and drive those runs in and give yourself a better shot with the right-handed hitter. I think that's a much more I think those players are much more interchangeable. I think sticking with the pitching plan does make sense. That's my take on it. So, you know, before I go to my next point on today's game, I want to run something by you all that I've been thinking about. This is a bit off script, but I want to run something by you. Buck, when we had the let's do this. So please comment on the hit batsman stuff and how the Mets handled that. But I also want to throw something else in that I'm going to ask you to comment on. And, Mike, I'm going to go to you first on this. So, yes, the Mets were hit four times in this series, three times above the shoulders. I don't think any of them were intentional, but Buck said that doesn't matter, and it probably doesn't at that point. You have a right to be angry. Even Dave Martinez said that the Mets had a right to be angry about it, but nobody's throwing at anybody. It's the ball, it's the cold, all these different things. So when the benches did clear, Buck was leading the charge. Now, if he's a 67-year-old man, I don't really think he should be fighting people at that point. But he was leading them on the field, and I think that's the word, leading, and that's what I want to ask you. So in addition to talking about the hit batsman and all of that, and do you think the Mets handled it right, are you seeing something there that shows team unity and we're not going to take it anymore kind of a thing? But the other thing I'm going to ask you to comment on is this. One of the things in business we talk about is a problem companies make is they make subject matter experts leaders. It doesn't necessarily equate. My point is Luis Rojas, brilliant guy, understands the statistics better than anybody, was a quality control coach, right? Subject matter expert in analytics, all those things. But was he a leader? We ask ourselves that in business all the time. You take a subject matter expert who might be the best engineer ever, and you put that person in charge of a team, it doesn't mean the person's a good leader. In fact, they're two very different skill sets, being a subject matter expert and a leader. Some people are both, absolutely. Some people are not. So I'm going to ask you this question. Did you see, and are you seeing, leadership in Buck that maybe we haven't seen in the Mets dugout for the past years, Callaway and Rojas? And also please comment on the way the Mets handled the I don't want to call them beanballs because they weren't, but the hit batsman. So, Mike, if you want to take that first, anywhere you want to go.
I absolutely see leadership. He jumped out of the dugout in rage, and, you know, the dugout emptied out in lockstep with him, behind him. He led, they followed. And, you know, that's a group effort. And, you know, the team as a whole took the Nationals out of their comfort level. Look, let's talk coaching and scouting. And you know what I say, Rich, once is an event, twice is a coincidence, three times is a trend. So it's clear that Washington told their pitchers pitch the Mets high and tight. No, were they, you know, trying to hit them? Obviously not, but just keep it high and inside. But they connected, they hit flesh. And, you know, that was one too many times. And Buck wasn't having it. He knows the ins and outs of baseball. He knows the minutiae. He knows the emotions of the game. He knows how to trigger people and responses and emotions and things of that nature. Some people don't know how to do that. They just push button, and like you say, you know, they're subject matter aficionados. No, Buck is a leader of men. He knows how to, you know, get a little bit more than just what they are getting paid to do. They, you know, leaders get people to act emotionally on their behalf. So when he came out, you know, leading their cause, they jumped to action. It was a call to action, and they responded in unison. It was a wonderful thing, and I'm glad it happened so early. It's a unifying event. All for one, one for all. So, you know, baseball-wise, again, I do think that Washington was trying to keep it high and tight. It's unfortunate that one too many pitches hit and connected with our players, the Mets players, but they responded quite appropriately. They responded without haste, and they responded as one. And Buck led the charge. He was out there first. And everybody came out. The bullpens emptied out as well. Cooler heads prevailed. No punches were thrown. A couple of pushes and shoves here and there. But, you know, cool heads prevailed. But nonetheless, whereas the Mets were taken out of their comfort zone by being pitched in tight, the Mets responded in kind as a team and took the Nationals out of their comfort zone by coming out on the field and addressing just that and telling them, we're not tolerating this anymore. And now we have a manager who controls that clubhouse narrative. He's inspiring the clubhouse camaraderie. And I think they have a clear leadership gain with Buck Showalter at the helm, more so than they had with Luis Rojas, who was a resume guy. He deserved to have a shot, and more so than Callaway. You know, and we have somebody who's in control of the media, unlike anybody since
Terry?
His name escaped me? Terry Collins.
Right.
So, you know, to me, this is all positive, and I think everything went swimmingly, beautifully, wonderful.
Very good. So, Anna, we're going to have you talk about what you do in a moment, but I know you've spent a lot of time in the business world. Maybe you've seen what I'm talking about, the difference between subject matter experts and leaders, and maybe you can comment on what you maybe have seen from Buck and also any thoughts you may have on the up-and-in stuff.
Right. Yes, as you both were talking about this, I was thinking about – so I really like Rojas. You know, he deserved the chance based on his resume and based on how respected he was by everybody in this ball club. And then when it was such a last minute decision that we needed a manager, it was admirable that he stepped in. But he, in my opinion, was way too mellow. And it kind of reminds me of people who are good speakers or can get up in meetings and be really good speakers. And then there's people who aren't as good at that. And even you could be the smartest person in the room, and it doesn't mean you can captivate like a meeting room full of people, or in this case, a bench full of people in a dugout. And the look on Buck's face and how passionately furious he was. And then nobody could get out of that dugout faster than him because he was out. I mean, like, even if you tried, he was out. So it just, I think the guys probably have to be thinking, that's my manager. That passion is my manager, and I loved to see that. And, you know, like you all said, obviously they weren't throwing at them at this stage in the game, at this stage in the season. I saw a quote from Buck that said he understood that they weren't throwing purposely, but they've got to get control of the ball. And he blamed the ball club. Like, then why did they make your team if they can't control the ball? Then they shouldn't be on your team. They shouldn't have gotten that pitcher's slot. Like, why are they, you know, why did they make the team? And I liken it to the hockey high-sticking rule. even when it's obvious that it was an error, like it was not a purposeful hit with the hockey stick, the rule is you must have control of your stick at all times. So even though we know it wasn't, at times, it wasn't a purposeful hit with the stick, you must have control of your stick at all times. And that's how I feel about these pitches. And three of them, I know Pete's wasn't to the head. It hit his shoulder, then his head. But that's dangerously close. McCann, it was in the head. And so, and obviously Lindor was in the head. McCann, one of them was in the head, and then one was, I think, the foot or something. But, like, Pete's hit by pitch and Lindor's hit by pitch, I happen to not be watching live with McCann's two. They were painful. Like, I screamed immediately. They're painful to watch. You know, just like last year, oh, my God, that Pillar. I didn't watch that live, and the Pillar hit, knowing it happened, I turned on that inning, and watching the inning, my heart was pounding, and then watching his at-bat, even though I knew what was happening, I was, like, shaking, you know? And that's how I felt, you know, like when you see Lindor go down, and then you saw both Pete and Francisco, they were visibly shaken, you know, like they paused, they stopped, they had to steady themselves. So, yeah, these guys have got to get control of their pitches. So I like what happened. I like that their pitcher apologized. I like that Lindor said, I'm pretty sure he didn't do it on purpose, but they have to get control of their pitches. And I loved that Buck led the charge. That is the definition of a leader. And again, we haven't had that personality for a manager since Terry. So I love it.
Very good. Sam, take us home on leadership from Buck. Is it something that the Mets haven't had? And how do you think they handled the up and in miscues?
Yeah, I mean, there's not much more that I can add to it, considering how well done you guys just covered it. I think that, you know, I've a big part of my theme in, like, most of my the scripts that I work on has to do with transitioning, the hard transition, especially I guess it just comes up with my generation a lot, the hard transition between adolescence and adulthood. And leadership is a big part of what you need to gain getting farther away from being an adolescent. And I think I struggle with leadership a lot, considering just that you know, they try to sometimes break it down, you know, black and white between you're either a leader or a follower. And so, you know, specifically with the Terry Collins part, and it's funny because a former player of Terry Collins was just on the screen for Boston, Kevin Plebecki. So it reminded me of how quickly time flies. We have spent since 2013 talking about the in-game managing that we did not like regarding Terry Collins. But you guys are absolutely right in terms of the qualities that he did have that helped them make a World Series during his tenure. And just everything that I saw within a game and a half was, this is why we wanted Buck when it all came down to it. This is what the Mets have needed for a very long time. And we're going to have things that we criticize about him, but he gets the benefit of the doubt so much when it comes to especially this early in the season. And I have this feeling that whether or not it's this year, that I believe he has a three-year contract, that at some point the struggles that we've had to win another world championship combined with the struggles Buck has had to make a World Series as well as win one, I think it's just the perfect junction for both the franchise and his career, and I just have this feeling that we are going to be crying tears of joy eventually.
Well, from your lips to God's ears. And this is the Metsian Podcast, and we're very thankful that you're listening, whether you're listening live or wherever you download your podcast, and you're listening to Sam, Rich, and Mike, the voices you always hear, and a very special one, that of Anna Bryce, who has been kind enough to join us tonight. So, Anna, as we do our mid-show check-in, if you'd like to tell us a little bit about yourself, where we can find you on social media and how you became a Met fan and your roots and all of that, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a marketer, and I have a company. It's a consultancy, Pinnacle Peak Marketing, and that's named after a mountain that's very close to here called Pinnacle Peak Mountain. And I work with clients, usually companies that don't have marketers, you know, within their company. So they're usually smaller companies or medium-sized companies that just need extra help. And I often serve as kind of like a contract player for those kinds of companies. But I sometimes work just project to project with people, and sometimes I'm, you know, on a monthly retainer with them. And I have a wide range of companies. Like right now, I have a B2B appointment setting company as one of my clients, and that's been 3 years. And then I have another client that I've had for 6 years that's a trucking company. I've had a geological engineering company as a client. Have a kitchen and bath association as a client. So it's just a wide range of people and projects and, you know, what we do. You know, when you guys got your new logo, I told Sam how much I liked it. I'm working on a logo right now because I'm going to start up my blog again, which I haven't done in quite a while, but Sports Fan Contessa. It's not live or anything yet because I'm working on a logo. I'll let you guys know when I do finally start blogging again, but I just kind of felt like it was time to get back to talking about sports again. And it won't be solely Mets because, you know, I'm a huge Rangers fan. I'm a huge Arizona Cardinals fan. I'm a huge Formula One fan. And, you know, listening to Sam just say things about, like, leadership and, you know, who's a follower, who's a leader, and it just made me think about, like, I'm actually, I know it doesn't really sound like it, and when I say to people, like, oh, I'm quiet like my dad, they laugh at me. They're like, you're not quiet, you know. But I kind of was, at least as a kid, you know, in school and everything. And, you know, once you get that out into the business world, you just kind of have to do things. And I have done Toastmasters, and I think that has made me feel much more comfortable speaking in front of people. And then there was this program called Women Unlimited when I was at Sony, a six-month program that really forced you to, like, get in front of people and speak and talk to upper management and interview them for a project. So, like, for example, I interviewed the president of Sony Electronics because someone said, well, ask him. He will absolutely do it. And I was like, really? And he did it. And he sat with me for 30 minutes and answered every question. And so stuff like that kind of got me out of my shell. And even, like, Toastmasters prepared me for – I've had two instances where people have kind of handed me a mic and said, hey, would you mind – starting us off. It's like, yeah, okay. So, you know, so again, I see that kind of stuff in Buck, you know, the leadership stuff. Me in a nutshell, you know, I was born in New York City, in Greenwich Village. I grew up in New Jersey and West Milford and Ringwood, New Jersey, two very small towns. And, you know, in 2006, we decided to move out here to Arizona because I've always loved it out here. And I still watch every single game, win or lose. Even when I know they've lost, I watch the game if I don't watch it live. I think that's
well, thank you for joining us.
Thank
you for sharing, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you guys inviting me on. It has been a while. I think the last time was when Jared Porter, that whole thing. So that's a long time ago.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
I think that was the last time. Yeah. Time flies, right? Time really flies.
Oh, my. Boy, that was in late 2020, I believe.
Yes,
so
exactly.
Well, okay. We'll have to make sure that there's not another 18-month gap. So, all right, Anna, well, thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing your Mets journey and your professional journey with us. And let's wrap up today's game. I think there's one more thing we have to talk about, and that is, you know, we've talked about the pitching. And, Anna, I'll start with you on this one. We talked about the pitching moves. We talked about Cano and J.D. Davis. Should there have been a pinch hitter? The other thing we have to talk about is, so I'm not blaming Pete for the loss. You never blame one person. But there was the safety squeeze where he had to play it at home, and he seemed to, you know, flip it a little a little too softly. Yeah. And so there's that. And then to me, the bigger problem was the next one, where he had the ground ball at first, and he didn't get any outs. He threw to second, threw wildly to second. That could have been a double play. You have to get at least one out there. So you could argue the Mets gave the Nationals five outs in the bottom of the eighth, and that did hurt Trevor Williams. So now, of course, our lovely Mets Twitter friends say, well, if they're both playing, Dom has to be at first and Pete has to DH. He can't play the field. He has to DH. We make this judgment in face on Monday. So, Anna, what's your take on the way Pete contributed to that bottom of the eighth? And do you think that for as long as Dom is here, put the better glove at first? Or, like Todd Zeal said, Pete has earned the right to play first because he has shown improvement and defensively, and he is the better offensive player when you come down to overall production. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, I'm with Todd Zeal. We have to commit to Pete or not commit to Pete. And he has improved defensively tremendously. And don't get me wrong, I completely understand that Dom is still better defensively. He really is. And for Dom's sake, I'm not even sure what I hope for Dominic Smith, because I don't want to lose him, but I wish he was playing first base every day. And obviously, I can't have both. So, look, the last two seasons, Pete has saved some games with his defense, or saved some innings with his defense, or saved some runs with his defense. Today was not a good day. It absolutely wasn't. That first one, where he didn't get him out at home plate, it almost looked like he double clutched or couldn't get it out of his glove or something. Like, there seemed to be a hesitation, and that definitely was the difference between getting him out and not getting him out. And, you know, obviously you can't give, no matter how good or bad a team is, they are Major League Baseball players. They are a Major League team. It doesn't matter if they're in last place and have been in last place. They're still going to win a game, and it might be against you, and it might be against you, a team that's quote-unquote not supposed to lose this game. And, you know, I guess we could say that about the Nets right now, being in such a rebuild situation. But I think Pete does deserve to play first base. I think Todd Zeal is right. He has earned it with his and how much he's improved, and obviously we need his bat. And hopefully, I know he doesn't want to DH, but he probably would welcome a day off here and there in the field. Look, I hate the DH. Even though this team is perfect for the DH, I still don't want the DH. But it's here, I accept it. I hope we can get Dom some playing time, even in the field a little bit. But I do think Pete has to be the first baseman.
Sam, your thoughts?
Oh, man. I think that I fully agree with Anna. I think Pete was in his head today. And slowly but surely, as much as I love Dom, I'm just realizing whether we win the World Series this year or not, whether Dom ends up being a part of that or used to for some midseason acquisitions, eventually Dom is not going to be on his team. And that's unfortunate, but I think it's just the logistical way that all of this is going to unfold. He's going to be a Hubie Brooks, and you're going to figure third base out. And it's most likely going to be within some sort of midseason trade, and he's going to be great as a full-time first baseman. There are options one way or another to try to get him in here, because you do think to yourself, like, well, who backs him up? Other than what it seems like Cano and James McCann would be the first base backups, you know, without Dom on here. And that's the only thing I can think of. You know, Dom has had a weird trajectory where Pete kind of just, you know, took over in the minor leagues, and there was just no denying the way that he was climbing up the system. So, yeah, I think that's my take overall. I don't think I have anything other to add other than what a shot by Polar Bear, which we will get into soon.
Indeed. Mike, your take.
It's a little unfortunate because for as long as Dom and Pete are on the same team, this debate will continue to rage on. I'm not conflicted. Pete Alonso's the first baseman, and I'm cool with that. I just feel sorry for Dom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, coming up through the system, all we heard about was, you know, what an outstanding defensive first baseman he was. And now that he's in the pros, you know, my greatest fear is him, like other players in Mets history, that he leaves us. And you guys heard me say this, that he'll go somewhere and he'll hit the ball like Bill Madlock once did, only he'll do it from the left side. And that's not overstating power. That's modest power, but hitting for high average. So it's just unfortunate. It's an unfortunate situation for Dom. I wish the Mets could do better by him. But, again, I'm not conflicted. Pete Alonso is the Mets' first baseman. And for as long as the two remain on the team, this debate will continue to rage on. We do feel that Dom is defensively the better first baseman, but, you know, Pete's bat speaks for itself. There's no getting around that. It's unfortunate. You know, and other teams will look at us and say, well, that's a good problem to have. That may be true, you know, but we care about these guys, and, you know, we just want to see things work out for our homegrown guys. Because they both are.
Indeed they are. All right, so we have one more thing to talk about, at least in my opinion, from the weekend before we look forward to what's coming up for the Mets for this week. And that would be baseball broke some new ground on Friday night with a broadcast that was exclusively on a pay service that you didn't have to pay for on Friday night, but I'm sure eventually you will. And that was Apple TV Plus. And as part of the new CBA, collective bargaining agreement, this is the way it is, folks. You know, we may not like it, but there will be games that will only be on Apple TV Plus. There will be games that will only be on Peacock. There will be games that will only be on TBS. On TBS, games, of course, will be free. Peacock says there will be no charge, at least for now. And Apple TV made this game free. So let's talk about, we've already talked about, at least Sam, Mike, and I have, Anna, you can comment on it if you like, this whole thing about going to paid TV to watch the games, what will eventually be paid TV. But let's talk about the broadcast. It was great. You had Melanie Newman, who does the Orioles, so it was great to see having a female, you know, lead the broadcast is great. You also had Hannah Kaiser as one of the analysts who we know, we see her on SNY, Baseball Night in New York sometimes. And then also we had Chris Young, former Met. So the names were good. I think it was great to see the diversity in the booth. Now, I will say I think you'd have to be living under a rock if you don't think that the very vast majority of the viewers did not like the broadcast. It shut down and for like 4 minutes at one point, and someone made a great comment that you think the biggest tech company in the world would have the streaming thing down, but that didn't work. So everybody freaked out. I think it was in like the fourth inning. It's just kind of, it's like a dentist with bad teeth, you know? But anyway, so that happened, and the broadcast, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to let you all talk about it. So we're going to get to Mike last because Mike abstained. He listened to the radio. I love that. So
it's great.
Let's start with you on this one. Your thoughts on the Apple TV broadcast? You could talk about the concept of, you know, pay to watch if you like. If
right.
We haven't talked to you about that. You can talk about any aspect of it you like.
Okay, so I'm going to start with, I loved hearing two female voices in the booth. I really did. And I know, like you said, we'd have to be living under a rock because I haven't seen a positive comment about the actual broadcast. And this is the problem that we have. Gary, Keith, and Ron are so unbelievably fabulous. And like, I'll give you an example. I do not watch D-back games anymore because I cannot listen to their broadcast booth. I literally have stopped watching D-back games for a few years now because I cannot listen to their broadcast booth. So this was my feeling about that booth is, it feels very generic, but it's like that when I listen to ESPN or any of these other, you know, Fox National games. It's just such a bummer to watch a Mets game with any other broadcast booth because it feels like a generic broadcast. And it also, I really hated, and I tweeted about it, like they, you know, when Juan Soto got interviewed and he was plugging Apple TV, and then they kept kind of plugging Apple TV, and I'm like, is this an advertisement for Apple? Like, I don't want to talk about Apple TV. Let's talk about the baseball game. So that was a weird dynamic for me, was it just felt like they were plugging Apple TV, and I don't want that plug. I do not want to hear from Major League Baseball all the complaining that they do about how do we get new fans, how do we get new fans. Well, I'll tell you one way that's not going to help keeping your numbers up of viewership is screwing your loyal fans. And I saw a lot of people online, and I even argued with some of them, get over it. Streaming's the way of the world now. And I'm like, well, if you want to help me explain how to get onto this broadcast to my 89 and 84-year-old mother who live in a different state than me, and they have the MLB package and they know how to maneuver that, if you want to get on the phone with me and explain this, luckily my nephew was home from school. He went over. He got them all set up, and they had no problem. Now, when the broadcast went out, when I got the error message, I'm like, ooh, I hope this is just me and not, like, I hope Dad's not getting this error message. He did get the error message. He did manage to figure out, but he said it took him a while, but he did manage to figure out how to get back on. I don't care that streaming is the way of the world. Older folks have no idea how to access it, and they have been fans for years. They have been fans for years, okay? I have no problem with Apple TV. Make it another option. Do not make it exclusive. I get that that's not as attractive for Apple TV or for Peacock or for YouTube or Facebook Watch. I get that that's not a completely attractive proposition for them, but I truly don't understand why they think they're going to get, Major League Baseball is going to get an exorbitant amount of fans that way, but yet do not give any consideration about their loyal fans and them just being able to watch the freaking game. And I pay for that MLB TV subscription for them and for myself. So I'm paying for a game that I don't get. It's just, someone has to explain to me why we're doing all this stupid stuff to attract fans that, in my opinion, will not be attracted to the game because it's on Apple TV. Is someone really going to say, I'm going to become a baseball fan because it's now on Apple TV? I don't think so. And maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't see it.
Richie there?
Sorry, I put a dollar in the jar. I was on mute. I think this is another example. I was making a great point, too.
Yes.
I think baseball tends to make short-sighted decisions that help them in the short term, bringing money into the coffers because Apple TV – well, I'll tell you right now. I know this because I did an article on this for Metrize. Every team gets $65 million this year between Apple TV and Peacock. So you know that's why that decision was made. It was made – it's money in the coffers right now, makes the owners happy. That's great. But you look at what these other sports do. They invest in the youth. I am not – I'm a man in my 50s, okay? I am not your customer, baseball. If you're going to keep appealing to me, you're appealing to the wrong person because someday I'm not going to buy tickets anymore. I'm not. And you need to be appealing to the younger people, and making the games exclusive on Apple TV is not the way to do it. It isn't. You're making the game less available. I just don't get it. So I'm supporting what you said, Anna, and then I'll turn to Sam and say, Sam, you watch the broadcast. What's your take?
Well, first of all, this entire outage thing, like it didn't happen for everybody because it didn't happen for me. I was basically watching from the get-go. I thought it was very comedy of errors that they had to deal with a light delay. And Mr. Garrett Cole, Max Scherzer had to deal with a light delay, not a Billy Crystal delay. So get just that's a whole nother tangent that I just don't want to go down. But so I think that considering that it was a first, sometimes we need to remember that people get experience, gain experience, get better. I mean, think about when Steve Gelbs was getting his feet wet, how everybody was complaining that it wasn't Kevin Burkhardt. And now Steve Gelbs is a fantastic part of the entire ensemble. So I think that you know, this was definitely the first broadcast. I'm not sure whether they're going to be doing it every time. I'm sure they're focus grouping it right now. We had one of our former own who didn't – I think he said something about playing with the Yankees but didn't mention anything about playing with the Mets, which I thought was kind of telling on Chris Young's part. But yeah, I think it was great in terms of the fact that there was females. And, you know, tangent regarding that, the Fairy Hawks recently signed a female, which I believe was the first – a woman ever signed by a professional baseball franchise to play. And so I can't add much more to it in terms of how well you guys said regarding the non-logic behind the entire thing regarding growing the game. I would have to agree with all of you about it.
Fair enough. Mike, you're the man here because Mike said he wasn't going to get into this whole thing with streaming, and you lived up to your word, which I think is fantastic. You listened to Howie and Wayne. So help talk us through your logic behind that. Is it, are you a conscientious objector to streaming, or you just didn't feel like it, or why did you do Howie and Wayne?
Look, here's the deal. I could have, but I chose not to. Look, Anna brought up a segment of the population that this is completely foreign to them and out of their control. They don't know how to access the game through Apple Plus or whatnot. And then you got people like me. I could have. I can. There was nothing stopping me. However, I enjoy listening to Howie Rose and Wayne Randazzo on the radio. Theater of the mind. Radio has sustained cable TV and everything else for 50 years now. You know, so radio's not going away, and it's a beautiful listen. And it's such a great game, too, Rich, because that was the game that Buck led the charge onto the field. And Howie Rose painted a wonderful picture. It was a Picasso in its beauty and its brutality because of what was going on. You see, but I can. I refuse not to. And I don't see what the problem is, Rich. You see, because I'm the idiot who pays for a Fios package and pays for some of these subscription services. You know, so I'm the idiot here. There's a whole generation who doesn't do that. They, you know, get three or four subscription services, they watch it on their phone, and they're paying far less money than I am. You know, so that goes back to the segmented customer base. I don't see what the issue is. I don't see what the problem is. Make it available on SNY and streaming services. Why do you have to make it exclusive? I'm in the position where I can choose, you know, and adapt beyond them at this point. And again, a younger population is spending a lot less money on TV than I am because I'm the idiot paying for a Fios package and streaming services. So I don't see what the problem is. I don't see, and as everyone has said, you know, this is just anti-growing the game. It works against, they work against themselves once again, always. It just, they always get in their own way, Rich.
And they're going to keep complaining about it. And that's when I'm going to say, stop. This is your doing. you know, the exclusivity is the problem. Let us watch it on SNY, and people who do not watch the game, but now it's on Apple TV because you think you're going to get them as a fan, they can watch it on Apple TV. You know, think about how many really big games that have been national broadcasts or not SNY broadcasts. That just annoys me. Max Scherzer's first game didn't have Gary, Keith, and Ron. Pete Alonso's big home run didn't have Gary, Keith, and Ron. We had, I don't remember who broadcasted it, but we had to listen to someone else call that record-breaking homer. It just changes everything, you know? It just stinks. It's generic.
Well,
it becomes a generic broadcast.
Generic is a good way to describe Friday. Oh, Sam, you had another point to make. And I think we know why they don't simulcast, you know, with SNY and Apple TV, because Apple TV is not going to cough up as much money as they did if they
– Right.
And I know we all know that. But, so, Sam, you had one more on this before we look forward.
Yeah. For one, we're spoiled. Whether it be Howie and Rose, whether it be Gary, Keith, and Ron, these are two Hall of Fame caliber broadcasts. And the second point regarding those Hall of Fame caliber broadcasts is that I don't understand, especially going into your first, it seems as if everybody has heard Gary, Keith, and Ron. Even I forget exactly who was the one who told her mother between the two ladies. I don't know who was the one who told her own mother about it, that she was going to be doing it for the first time in her life, and that she that her mother was just like, oh, that's too bad that it's not going to be exclusive. I love listening to Gary, Keith, and Ron. So my point on that is I don't understand why people don't study them. Gary, Keith, and Ron, I other than maybe sometimes not agreeing or thinking, certain things, I never have a problem with the way – it's literally a straight A-plus every single time. Especially on the losses when they do get a little silly. People are complaining about how they were talking about random things instead of talking about the game. I do think sometimes Keith, Gary, and Ron do talk about random things, but they do it in such a well-woven way within the game narrative. And I wish that more people would study Gary, Keith, and Ron.
That Lost in Space banter was awesome the other night when they were talking about Lost in Space. That was awesome.
And just to be fair. I'm sorry. And just to be fair, I love GKR. I really do. But I'm busy. And I got the Brooklyn Nets on the TV, or I got the New York Rangers on TV, and I perhaps listen to Howie Rose and Randazzo a lot more often than the average person who's not in their car driving somewhere. So I enjoy the radio immensely. And I spend a lot of games listening to them because, like I said, this is the time of year, basketball and hockey playoffs. I got that on the TV and I got the Met game on the radio.
Well, there you go. There were some things about the broadcast that I thought were actually decent. I thought some of the statistics were good, showing some of the hit probability. But then again, the problem with it is the whole thing was an advertisement for gambling, which I firmly object to. This year at Citi Field, there will be a gambling opportunity. Like one of them, I'm not sure which one it is, DraftKings or whichever one it is, will actually have a kiosk at Citi Field so you can gamble during the game. And if you watch the pregame on Apple TV, all it was, Juan Soto is a 300-1 to win the MVP, so you can call right now and place that bet. I thought it was disgusting. It was 75% about betting on that particular game or other bets you can make, and it just didn't sit with me the right way. The whole thing doesn't. I don't mind the streaming. I really don't. That is the way of the world, like you said, Anna. But the thing is, it's not because it's the way of the world. They're streaming it because they got money in their coffers right away, and all they're doing is being funded by gambling. It sullies a beautiful game. That's my opinion.
By the way,
let's look.
I'm already streaming the game because I'm on the Major League Baseball package. My parents are already streaming the game because they're on the Major League Baseball package. But again, it's really a hardship trying to get them to understand what this other thing is. Just don't make it exclusive. And I get that they wouldn't pay the money, but you know what? So all these owners are making all this kind of money, and the Oakland A's have a $33 million payroll. I mean, that's just not right. They're taking a beautiful game and actively trying to kill it while acting like they're not trying to kill it and then complaining about it.
I'm with you. I have no rebuttal to that. I think you're right. So we spent an hour and 10 minutes talking about the series in Washington. And once again, you're listening to the Mets Ian podcast with Sam, Rich, and Mike, and our special guest tonight, Anna Bryce. And we will take a quick look forward before wrapping it up. So as we look at this coming week, the Mets will have 3 in Philadelphia, two night games followed by a day game on Wednesday, then take Thursday off. Let's talk about the Philadelphia series. I think the level of competition is going to be a little different in the city of brotherly love than it was in Washington. Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, that team can hit. So you have Taijuan Walker opening the series, and then the Mets will go back to Tylor Megill. And then on Wednesday afternoon, and there should not be any rain, so I think it will hold this way. Wednesday afternoon, you'll have Max Scherzer. So any thoughts on the series? And I want to throw one more thing in for perhaps you can comment on.
would be, I saw something that was a bit concerning, that for the first time since the start he made in 2010 and left the start early because of injury, it was the first time since that start 12 years ago that Max Scherzer did not get any swings and misses on his four-seam fastball. So he did not get any swings and misses on his four-seam fastball on Friday night. And like I said, that was the first time since 2010 that that had happened. I'm not going to get too crazy about that yet because of the hamstring. Maybe he's not throwing it as hard. The one thing that I did like about the start on Friday was he clearly wasn't dominant early, but he did what a 37-year-old savvy veteran will do. He went to his secondary pitches, and he was able to look quite good the last couple of innings he threw. So the Scherzer thing, the upcoming series in Philly, Mike, start us off, please.
Well, you know, Tyler Megill pitched a wonderful game to open up the season for us, and as did Chris Bassett. Those were two big question marks. We were dying to see how they were going to perform, and they did beautifully. But as you say, Rich, now the competition gets a little bit tougher. Let's see how these guys perform against Philly. And as you say, Taiwan Walker has yet to take the mound. We still need to see him. But, you know, I'm walking out of Washington happy with the performance of the starting pitching, and that's what I'm focusing now on in Philly. Can they sustain against the better lineup? So let's go Mets. Good luck to Tyler Megill, and let's see if Chris Bassett can continue. He's the veteran here versus Megill. Let's see if this will be his 20th major league start, Tyler Megill. And, you know, he's got a handful of games between that most recent start and a couple of games last year that we can point to that were quite impressive. So I'm excited to see him pitch against the Phillies. That's what I'm largely taking into the series at Philadelphia.
Okay, and Megill will take the start Tuesday night. And you know what? You're good. Thank you for bringing that up, Mike, because we didn't talk about that. Megill on Tuesday night, my God. I mean, throwing 99 at one point, it's something that we hadn't seen from him. And, in fact, you know, he had that really bad August and September, and he really stepped up. So thanks for bringing that up. So let's go to Sam next on this one. Sam, thoughts on the series in Philly?
Well, I also have for us a comment from a Phillies fan about what we should expect and what's going on in Philly world, if you will. And this comes from Ted Mady, who's actually been on maybe not the Metsian podcast, but dollar in the jar there, but. Maybe where he was on the Rising Apple Report back when we did it over there. So Philly's identity this year will be offensive power. You add the high-profile acquisition of Schwarber and Castellanos to reigning MVP Harper, a healthy Hoskins, and Real Muto. You get an intimidating lineup with tremendous power potential. The power comes with some defensive liability. Reeves, Schwarber, and Castellanos can't all DH every day. The rotation is strong but not well protected from injury. Wheeler and Nola form a nice 1-2 punch, but there is no major league ready depth behind our fifth starter if a regular lands on the IL. Bullpen has been revamped but must prove itself, and there is some optimism around young former first-round pick Bryson Stott, who made the club after a strong spring. He'll be playing short and third while challenging Didi and Bohm for playing time. To touch on our end in terms of Megill, I think one of the strongest parts about what makes you very optimistic is, one, it seems like he's wearing his one-year experience under his belt well. That sophomore slumps may be, and especially, you know, maybe combining with the opportunity to show what he can do because of the Jake Grom injury, that Megill is wearing is going to avoid a sophomore slump because of what just knowing a little bit better what to do. And so you look back at the game with blowing it by Juan Soto when I believe it was either first and third or second and third, but, like, it was an opportunity to show what he's made of. And he not only handled it, but had this great swag on the mound after he struck Juan Soto out. Yeah, those are some of the interesting things, like what he's going to do against that power-laden lineup that we're talking about, that my friend was talking about. I don't think we need to completely sleep on the Nationals because they did win the World Series 2 years ago, albeit with a lot of pieces that they moved. But they also showed some during that time that some of these young pieces they got back made better than we. So, mind you, I think it's clear that we're going to have to deal with the Phillies and we're going to have to deal with the world champion Braves. But who knows what's going on in Miami. So I think that it's a good division. And anytime people talk about, like, how, you know, it's a terrible division, all the records are off, I think sometimes what they don't recognize is that there might be more parity in that division than you realize, and that's why they've beaten up on each other. They continue to, you know, basically go back and forth considering the majority of the games are played against each other. So whether that's going to continue in the future is a whole other topic, but that's my take on the Philly series. I'm glad, you know, the Diamondbacks are coming up, that they kept some of the tradition of facing your division right out of the gate.
Fair enough. I think it's going to be a hell of a test for the Mets, especially in Philadelphia. So, Anna, your thoughts on the upcoming series against the Phillies?
Well, I think this is a really good opportunity for the Mets to make somewhat of a statement. So last year when Schwarber hit the 3 home runs against us, I was at that game in Washington. It was like 800 degrees, and I had to drink 4 big bottles of water, and I had to get a gelato because I just had to try to figure out a way to stay cool. It was a miserable game. We did lose, and he hit 3 home runs. And the Phillies, I went to 2 games last year in Philadelphia, had never been to that park before. And we got swept, if you recall. And if you also recall, we lost first place at that moment. And we went into that series in first place and left that series out of first place, and then we never really got it back. Wheeler pitched almost a no-hitter against us, right? I think he ended up not giving up a hit until way late in the game, and then I think gave up 2 hits. He pitched a complete game. So let's make a statement. We're the team that you all are going to have to beat. I just think now is the time to put people on notice. Let's turn this around.
I mean, let's look at it like this. Mets go into Philly and they lose, God forbid they get swept. Same old Mets, right? Blah, 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 blah. You lose 2 out of 3. Oh, you know, you beat up on Washington, but you can't beat the Phillies. You win 2 out of 3. Huh. People take notice. So I think you're right. I think, look, I don't want to overemphasize an early season series, but I do think for the narrative reasons, I think to control the narrative, go in there and take the series. You know, got to do it. Got to beat them. They have a great lineup. That's true. That's some good pitching. So let's see what happens. Should be fun. All right. So as we bring the show home, one more thing to talk about is the Mets will be opening at home. And it's interesting we have Anna on from Arizona. They're open at home against the Diamondbacks. How interesting. And so the Mets will open on Friday, Jackie Robinson Day. Weather is at this point looks like showers, but we'll see. So the Mets will have a day game, so move to a day game, and they'll open at City on Jackie Robinson Day, which is a very important day. And I know Sam and Mike have a separate podcast they do about Brooklyn baseball, and that's a tie-in there. So there's that. The Seaver statue gets unveiled on Friday. That should be an awesome moment, overdue, but Mr. Cohen got it done. That's fantastic, too. And then Saturday is important to me because I'm going to the game, and I'm very excited about that. So, so coming up, we have Mets opening weekend at Citi Field, Jackie Robinson Day. There will be baseball in New York on Jackie Robinson Day, which we weren't sure there would have been when the lockout was going on. So we have that. We have the Seaver statue, and we are open for comment. Let's start with Mike.
Seaver statue, long overdue. Thank goodness, and thank you for those responsible. Can't wait to see it one day. I won't be going to opening day. I will be going to the Brooklyn Cyclones opening day on Tuesday, and I'll be back at Brooklyn Cyclones on Friday for Jackie Robinson Day. So I'll be celebrating there. You know, this is an all-inclusive podcast, Met System. We love our little farmhands. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. But the Tom Seaver statue reveal is something that, you know, a lot. And, Rich, what do I mean by that? You know, the older Met fans who saw him pitch, and even the older ones who actually saw him win World Series here. That's going to be special. And I can't wait to see it. I know they got it right. Or at least we hope they got it right. Right, Rich? Because Met fans, if there's anything wrong with this thing, we're going to pick it out too easily. Too easily. So let's cross our fingers and hopefully it's a masterpiece. And I have every confidence that it will be.
I think you're right, Mike. I think these are not the LOL Mets anymore. I think they will get it right. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing it on Saturday. Of course, I didn't know this when I got to see it. Seaver replica statue giveaway thing. So that's a nice little add-on. So, all right. So let's go to Sam next. Sam, I know you're very into Brooklyn baseball. Mets are always home for Jackie Robinson, as they should be, National League team. And it's going to happen, and I know as recently as 6 weeks ago we weren't sure. So what's your take on the whole Seaver opening at Citi on the 15th, hopefully, if weather permitting, and your take?
I do think you're right, although correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in 2020 they had to celebrate it at Yankee Stadium, I think that it's completely long overdue. I wouldn't necessarily say the floodgates, but there's a lot of different opportunities to correct. It's unbelievable how tone deaf, like the nuance of tone deafness the Wilpons were. But like Mike said, stop talking about the Wilpons. I think there's a lot of opportunity now going forward with the statue making. I wouldn't mind all three of Bob, Lindsay, and Kiner to be a statue. I wouldn't mind Casey basically replicating the little miniature statuette that is at the Hall of Fame of Casey as a Met. And then, you know, the Piazza, I think Wright. You know, there's all different types of opportunities and discussions that we can have for what the Wilpon should have been doing years ago. So there's that. And, unfortunately, I've made the decision that I won't be able to do both Cyclone baseball on Jackie Robinson Day as well as the Mets game, and also for monetary purposes, because opening day can just get so expensive on top of tickets. And so I'm not going to be going to both, but I will be going to my first Cyclones game in a long, long time, starting on the 12th and as well on the 15th. And what's beautiful about the game on the 12th is that it will be the first professional baseball game played in April in Brooklyn since 1957. And we will be doing a lot over on Bedford and Sullivan podcast that supports my writing idea about it. HBO-style TV series about Brooklyn and the Dodgers. We will be doing a lot on that day regarding the historic Brooklyn baseball game.
That sounds great, Sam, and I hope that – enjoy the game, guys, both games, and I hope that really does serve you well as you look to continue your work on Brooklyn and its baseball history. So, Anna, your thoughts on I still think it's ironic that they're playing the Diamondbacks and we have you on. So your thoughts on the Seaver statue and Jackie Robinson Day and all of that.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to it. And really, think about this. Unveiling this statue is really one of the most important moments in this franchise's history. Obviously, it took way too long, and we won't mention the former owners because they're gone, thankfully. And it really is one of the most important moments. He is the franchise. I mean, I remember when he was traded, the tears, you know, when he was traded. So this is just such an important moment. And I'll be watching, and I'm taking steps to use a different streaming service that my nephew has told me about so I can watch and listen to the Mets broadcast of this, because I kid you not when I say this, I cannot listen to the Arizona D-backs broadcast booth for these three games. So I'll be watching SNY's broadcast with this other streaming service. And I'm looking forward to it. And then the following week, the Mets are here in Arizona, April 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. So I will be there for all three games. One of the games I'm even going by myself, but I look forward to it. Maybe Doc Gooden will be in the audience again. He was sitting the next section over from me last year when I went, and he went to all three games last year. So maybe he'll be there all three games again this year. But and this is good incentive. I don't get to New Jersey all that much because my parents don't live there anymore. So I honestly haven't been to Citi Field in quite a while. I can't even remember how long it's been. I'm at the point that I've been to more Mets games at Coors Field than I have at Citi Field. But it's incentive to get my butt back to Citi Field. I made it as far as Philadelphia last year for two games and Washington for a game. So now I need to get myself to Citi Field to see that statue.
I think that would be a nice plan to have for the summer. So
Yep. This
is the Mets podcast. We want to thank you very much for listening in and spending the last 90 minutes with us. I know I very much enjoyed talking baseball with Sam and Mike and our special guest, Anna Bryce from Arizona, as you just heard. So this is the point at which we wrap up the podcast, and we go around and ask everybody for their final word for the evening. So let's do this. Let's thank Anna for joining us tonight. And Anna, if you could give us a quick reminder on where people could find you on social media and read your stuff, and also give us your last word for the first weekend of the 2022 Major League Baseball season.
Great. Okay, so to find me on Twitter, and I'm connected with a bunch of Mets fans on Twitter, it's just at Anna Bryce. And, again, my company is Pinnacle Peak Marketing, so that's easy, pinnaclepeakmarketing.com. Keep an eye out, and I'll announce it when I start blogging again. But once I do, my sportsfancontessa.com blog will be up and running. And this first weekend of baseball, I'm really ready. I'm into it. I'm ready. I'm ready for more games. I will watch 162 Mets games, win or lose. And then what I do after I watch the Mets games, because out here they're on at 4 o'clock, so, you know, 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock-ish. And then what I do is I usually turn on the LA Angels right after that, and I finish up the evening with their game. So I'm looking forward to the rest of this season. I'm going to two Mets games at Dodger Stadium for the first time ever. I'm going to then drive to San Diego for a game and then get back up to LA and work for the week and then go to an Angels Mets game. So I've got a lot of plans for Mets games this year. So already I've got seven Mets games planned. in visiting ballparks. So I'm ready for the rest of the season.
That sounds phenomenal. I have no other word. That is just a wonderful summer plan, and good for you. Please tweet pictures from the games. We'd like
Will
to see it. And we wish you a great time in each and every location, and, of course, Mets wins. So now I'll turn to my podcasting cohorts for their final word for the first weekend of 2022 baseball season. Let's go to Mike.
Let's go. That's it. Let's go Mets. Let's go Rangers. Let's go Brooklyn Nets. Let's go Brooklyn Cyclones. Let's go. Spring is a wonderful time of year.
Fantastic, and it certainly is, except for me because I have allergies, but I know what you mean.
same here.
You're up. Mr. CEO of Podcasting Operations, what's your final word for tonight?
Baseball. Man, am I just thrilled it is back. I feel reinvigorated in both my love and passion for the sport and the New York Mets. I'm happy to have my city legs starting to be back under me and that I'm not feeling like I need to be driving around all the time, as much as I did enjoy that. And I'm looking forward to taking advantage of being back around the city again so I can collect baseball from many, many different corners as you can now in this great city of ours. So whether it be Queens, whether it be Brooklyn, and whether it be Staten Island, I look forward to collecting baseball.
That sounds great to me. And once again, thank you, everyone, for listening to the Metsian podcast. We couldn't do it without you. We have had a great time talking Mets baseball. I've had a great time talking baseball with Sam and Mike and, of course, with Anna, who we will have back on the show certainly this season. So, Sam, we always turn to you at this point to take us out the only way you know how, and how would that be?
Thank God baseball's back. Thank God the New York Metropolitans baseball is back. And I have nothing else but to say, let's go Mets. Let's go Mets. Let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets.
Let's do it, Philly.
That sounds great. Thanks, everyone. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you real soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Anna.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Bye now.